Here we are on the 14th day of Sfiras HaOmer, Tov Shin Samach Hei, Mitzvah Shabbos Kedesh, Hei Omer Aleph. And we're holding right in the middle of the sugya, trying to figure out, just remember what we've done so far. First, we discovered that there were two Rishuyos of Shabbos, Rishus HaYoch and Rishus HaRabi, and we gave examples of the Mishnah of how you would do Akira, Otzah, and Hanocha, and Bichayev, and how you could do either a Otzah with a Hanocha and Bipater, or an Akira with a Otzah and Bipater, but if there were two people involved, neither of them could be Chayev. And we had also four other cases of someone who was completely passive. He just sat there, someone took something out of his hand, but it didn't. Those were mutter. And then we got into another problem. And we started analyzing what's happening in the Mishnah, which is where we're holding right now, what happened about the hand itself. That's our problem. Everything was done in terms of the hand. If you would have given me a simple case where something was in Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, I wouldn't have had that problem. Obviously, the Mishnah is trying to make life complicated for us. Density, information density, that's the whole point of the Mishnah. The first problem we have with the Yad is we can't figure out if it's the Yad that is in Rosh Hashanah, but it was the body that it's attached to, Rosh Hashanah, what status it has. We prove that if it's attached to a body in a different rishus, it does not have the din of the rishus that it's in. That's for sure. It also doesn't have the din of the rishus to the body that's attached. It's also for sure. Because otherwise, you should be chayev even if you put something into the hand of the ani, let's say you're the balabayas. Right? Because you already, if it's attached, you've already put it into that rishus. And vice versa. It was already taken from that rishus. So it can't have that then. Okay. That we proved. So we got into a whole issue then about, so what din does it have? Does it have some type of interim din? Is it a no space? Is it a Carmelite space? Fine. Then we left that. So again, we got into another problem. The other problem is, okay, forget about what din the hand has. But when the hand is together with the body in that same rishus, you put something into the hand. Mishnah says you're chayav. Or you take something out of that hand, the Mishnah says you're chayav. Problem is that we know that the din of Hanacha and Akira requires an object to be at rest. And if it's in a hand that's not 4x4, it's not considered to be at rest in that rishus. So even if it's technically in this space, it's not enough to be in this space. It has to be munach. The munach, it has to be in a mokum chashuv. In a mokum chashuv is 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. And that's what we were in the middle of. So we attempted a number of different theories. We tried to identify first, maybe the Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Akiva, who holds that kluta is kemisha huncha. That once an object registers in the space of a particular rishus, it's considered to be in that rishus. It doesn't require to be settled down. Turned out that Rabbi Akiva does not hold that that applies to both Akira and Hanocha. So that didn't work. We thought maybe the din of Rebbe had a curious case of kids throwing a baseball through someone's window into the other rishus on the other side of the block. That didn't work, because it turned out that Rebbe was only talking about where the baseball went through the living room window. So that basically the whole room was considered to be filled because it was covered. So that's a whole different analysis of space where it's covered. And that doesn't work for rishus HaRabim. Because you can't have rishus HaRabim that's covered. So our Mishnah, which is talking about rishus HaRabim, half of the cases we're talking about the only standing rishus HaRabim, got a problem. So that's where we were holding. We did not have a solution to how does it work to have a hand that's not 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim and still be chayev on your Akira HaHanacha. So that brings us up to Daf Hei, which is where we are. And we attempt now a new teretz. Ela Omer Rabbi Zeira is where we're up to over here. Ela Omer Rabbi Zeira, Ha-Mani Acherim. This is going according to the Shita of the Acherim. And the sheet of the Acherim is, the Tanya, Acherim Omrim, does everybody have the place? Nine lines down. Acherim Omrim, Amad b'mekomo v'kibel chayav. Akar mimekomo v'kibel. No, it's not external. Amad b'mekomo v'kibel chayav. Here the question is, somebody's throwing a ball, and the person who catches the ball is standing in the place where it was thrown. He doesn't move to catch the ball. It was thrown directly to him. In that case, the one who threw the ball is chayav, because he did both the akira and the anacha, because it landed in this guy's baseball glove. But how about if the guy had to run in order to catch the ball and put out his glove and catch the ball? Then the thrower is putter, because then the person who catches the ball has interrupted the original trajectory of the ball. So it turned out that what it was that the original person did really was not mekuyam at all, because his kayach, which was originally meant to land at point X, didn't make it to point X, because somebody interrupted in between. Right? So in other words, somebody else had to do the act of the hanacha.
What if point X is actually the guy who has to move because the throw is off?
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. That's just his intent, but it's not the trajectory. In other words, as it stands right now, there's no place for it to land. It was meant to land there. Now it lands here. Why? Because I interrupted. Okay, so then that means he's the one who did the hanacha. Yeah, of course they're all patur. But in that case, here we're talking about the Zorek. So the Zorek is potter. But anyway, the point is that he's catching the ball in a glove that's not 4x4. So apparently there's clearly a sheet that it holds that ball playing on Shabbos can lead you to a Chiyuv Chatos. Or worse. So apparently that's who it's going according to. Don't we need hanocha in a place where you have four tvachim by four tvachim, and that's not what we have? Apparently, the Acherim hold that it's not necessary to have a mokam of arba'a. Now, wait a second. I thought we said before that we have to establish both what the din is by Akira and what it is by hanocha. But that was the whole reason we dropped Rabbi Akiva, because we only had one direction. In other words, we were willing to say that the Akira and Hanukkah may not be definitive in terms of where it is, but rather how it's moved, you see. If it defines where it is, then whatever it is that I big Oker has to be from the place where it was Munach, they would have the same din. But if Akira and Hanukkah are a definition of how I move something, and it's not necessarily true that it needs to be the same, the mokum that it's munach, or the mokum that I'm ochre it from. All that you've proven over here is that you can do hanocha in a baseball glove. That's all you proved. You can't prove that if I take something out of somebody's baseball glove and throw it, that then that itself is going to be considered to be an akira, if I don't pick that ball off the ground. So how do I know it? Maybe it's Davka that Akira Hanocha rather, but Dilma Hanocha who Deloba Ina. Maybe we don't need Hanocha to be in a large 4x4 area, but Akira maybe Beina. And you know what? You can't even really prove that the case over here necessarily wasn't 4x4. Because once he uses a glove to catch a ball, I mean, maybe the guy basically lifted up his skirt and caught the ball in his skirt. It might have been a little embarrassing, but it's worth it to make that catch.
Or a glove, arba lava. Now there's any
or
arba
a big
lava.
Glove, yeah. Arba lava. So in other words, maybe push it knafe, maybe he spread his wings, nice way of saying it, and caught the ball. In which case, don't do that to me now. So that doesn't even prove that, because then ikanami anaka, then this case would have even anaka gabi mokam arba. Omer Rabbi Abba Rabbi Abba says, look, the case is very simple. The Mishnah is talking about that basically he was using not a baseball glove, but what was that thing again they used there? That big, no, but racket. those old rackets with the big, what are those things called?
Cricket.
A cricket thing, yeah. What is that big thing they use?
Lacrosse.
Lacrosse, maybe it is. That's not South African, huh?
No.
Ah.
Yeah, North American.
Ah, North American. He doesn't want to say Canadian. So maybe it was a lacrosse racket. Right? He's wearing, it's a trascal, basically. A trascal is a basket. So this is a basket. So, I mean, what makes you think that it necessarily had to be in a hand or in a baseball glove? Maybe it was in a large racket, and then it was 4x4. In which case, you have both Akira and Anoch, and everything is fine. But it says, Yado shall balabai. It says, Yado shall ani. I mean, this is not... Well, yeah, Yado. I mean, Traskel should be Yado, you know? I mean, just put in that extra word. Traskel should be Yado. The Mishnah is not coming to define necessarily the din of Arba al Arba. Now, wait. There's one problem. Let's take a look at the Traskel. Okay, the Balabayit just happens to be wearing a Traskel in the middle of his living room. All right, fine. I'll accept that. But the Ani, if he wears a Traskel in Rishus HaRabim, that Traskel being 4x4 becomes Rishus HaYachid. So now why would I be chayef putting it from one Rishus HaYachid into another Rishus HaYachid? It's amazing how the Gemara has managed to fit in so many different halakhas just by analyzing. It's marvelous, the information.
How does that work again?
Well, that's the question.
Whether does it work, the honey? Is in
the we're going to get to it. We're going to get to it in a minute. That your question.
Is he attached to it? Is attached.
His hand remains attached to him.
No. That thing.
Well, the Traskel is in his hand.
And it becomes
Rishus HaYachid if it's 4x4, assuming... Now, well, let's make sure that that's true. How do we know that that's true? Unless, maybe it's not true. If it's not true, then it's not going according to the sheet of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, because it's the sheet of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda who says that a basket on a pole is Rishus HaYachid. See, the problem over here is Rishus HaYachid has to be 4x4 tefachim. But it also has to be a minimum of 10 tefachim high. Now, the way normally we take 10 tefachim high is that the mechitzot are 10 tefachim high. If you're holding a traskel, where are the mechitzot? Let's say even if the traskel is 10 tefachim high, it's 4x4, 10 tefachim high, but there's no mechitzot. Generally, a space is defined by mechitzot.
So it doesn't have sides?
Ah, but the sides, in order to register, have to be 10 tefachim. That's the problem. Now, we do have halachas that are, which we saw, I'm sorry, a lot of in Sukkah, about stretching. We could stretch the edge of a roof, for instance, right? We could stretch a wall, we could up or down, good achit and good achiz, and pitikra, yoreit v'sotei. We have a lot of curious halachal emotion misinais about the nature of mechitzos. Now, it happens to be that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda holds, the tiny Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Na'atz Kanab Rishut Rabim. You take a pole, you stick this pole in the middle of Rishut Rabim, and you glue a basket to the top of the pole. Now, the pole obviously doesn't have 4x4, it's just a pole. The basket does have 4x4. Barosho Treskal. Then, this was, of course, the first... I thought it was the first basketball.
4x4, I mean.
It was the first, all right, well, it's a big talking. Basketball.
We're
talking, it's about the size of basketball.
It depends,
yeah.
If the pole is 50 feet high.
That's right, I mean, it's better. But in those days, they didn't know they had those kind of basketball players.
They weren't using African.
Well, he's talking about Quidditch. I mean, if it's Quidditch.
So it's Nubian ball players.
Okay. So what happens is, if you now move back, throw the ball up, it gets caught up there on the top, in your net, you're chayev. Because it's Rabim Tiyachid. So he apparently holds that the mechitzot, in this case, are the mechitzot of the traskel itself, you don't need for there to be a visible mechitzot of 10 tefachim. Now, apparently, you hold not like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, then it could work. In other words, the guy is holding a basket in Rishut HaYachid, in Rishut HaRabim. If you don't hold of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't become Rishut HaYachid because it doesn't have mechitzot. Is that what you're saying? I mean, you want to insist that our Mishnah is a non-recognized chaluka, a bar plukta of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, that's taking a drastic step. We're not familiar with the shita that doesn't hold like this exactly. So therefore, the Gemara wants to know, are you insisting that the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda? The Ikar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Because if you do hold like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, the moment the Baal HaBayit stretches his hand out and puts it into the basketball, then he's now chayav because of the Natana Tov Yador Shel Ani. I mean, he should not be chayav because he's going from Rishut HaYachid to a Rishut HaYachid. And now here was Avner's excellent question, which was Tosfos's question, which is, okay, you're not chayav for taking from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim, but why are you not chayav for being Moshit from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaYachid with Rishut HaRabim, the Emtza, which is the case of passing over the parts of the Mishkan from one truck to the truck to the next truck? Okay, and the answer is, Tosfos bases his answer on the Yerushalmi. First of all, you have to know that the case of Moshit is limited to what's known as Duta Achat. The two, because the trucks were parked on one behind the other, so when you pass from one to the other, you have to be passing along the line of Rishut HaYachid and not across Rishut HaRabim. That's A. So, first of all, you have to, in order to ask the kash, you'd have to assume that it was Bidyuta Akat. That the door, in other words, the door of the Ani is standing on the edge, and the Baal HaBayit is passing, instead of across Rishut HaRabim, along the length of the Rishut HaRabim. Okay, but even given that, says Tosfos, it's clear that the Hoshata requires two participants. And he brings this from Yerushalmi. It's very interesting, because Yerushalmi actually asks that that's absurd. All over you say two people are doing a potter, and now you're saying it's only chayev if there's two people. What's going on? Okay, that's a sugya we'll get into in the din of Hoshata and Zoret. But this certainly doesn't fit the requirements of Hoshata. Not to mention that it would be quite a stretch to say that the Mishnah is talking about a case of emotion from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRab, Rishus HaRab, HaYachid, Rishus HaRab, Be'emtza. I mean, with the whole point, especially the way Rava was learning this too, Rishuya, he said, you're Chayav Arba, this. Okay. But anyway, so we can get out of your problem. Precisely how to get out of it, and that involves that Yerushalm. Because, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't work. I'm my Chayav. Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaYachid, come up. He's taking out from one Rishut HaYachid into the other Rishut HaYachid. Says the Gemara, no, it's very simple. Look, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, the place where the Traskal turns into Rishut HaYachid is obviously only if it's Lamala Mi'asara. Why can't the Ani be holding his Traskal on his hand Lamata Mi'asara? If it's Lamata Mi'asara, it never turns into Rishut HaYachid. Because it must have at least Mechitzot of... right? Now Tosfos says, but wait, one of the nose spaces is a Rishut HaRabim without mechitzas of 10, but which is differentiated from the overall Rishus into an area 4x4 tefachim. So even though it may not be Rishut HaRabim, a Rishut HaYachid, it's no longer Rishut HaRabim. It has a din of a Drabbanan Karmelite. So it wouldn't be a good example of chayav because you'd be putting it into a nose space. Again, I love the information density here, right? Because nobody's even bothered told us about all the dinim of Shabbos. We managed to sneak them in into this Mishnah. And there's a very important yesod. Tosfos explains that you have to recognize that the dinim of nose spaces are not chal on objects within another space. In other words, you're not going to say that if I'm holding my hat, that now my hat becomes a space which is choshev b'fnei atzmo. A kli, an object of some kind, is not a space. So if it fulfills the full requirements of a space, so it's a real yeshiva bacher's hat. So it's 4x4 plus 10 far from the whole. So then, fine, then it has the real dinim of a space, right? But if you need to come on to its being a violation of the space in which it's in, it's bottled to its space. It doesn't create a new space.
So how does that relate to the hand, then?
No, a hand is not an object.
No, the dinning of the hand,
as we said. Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see that actually a hand is a special case, is what we're going to be getting to. So therefore, our mission is talking about Lamata Me'asar. There is such a thing. There is a folding. There's a folding serving table, which is called a treskal. I'll shame the basket weave of it. We use it also nowadays. It's very popular to have a basket weave picnic, you know, what do they call them? What? No, you know, the outdoor furniture. What's the word for the type of weave? Oh, for goodness gracious. What's wrong with you guys? Wicker, thank you. Save me. Wicker it is. Yeah. That's worth 10 shekel right there. So, there was one little problem with all of this which Rabbi Avu didn't like. He keeps getting back to it like a aching tooth. It doesn't say Traskel Shabiyoto in the Mishnah. It keeps saying Yodo. And I mean, whatever you're going to tell me, I can't accept this. I mean, mi katani trasko shabiyado, yado katani, it says his hand. Therefore, says Rabbi Abu, it's a very simple solution. It must be that his hand is within three tzvachim of the ground. And the din is that anything within three tzvachim of the ground is bottled to the ground. That's called lavud. So if it's within three tzvachim, it's lavud. So the guy has his hands all the way down on the ground.
Sound like one of these
Calvin Hobbes. Wait, it gets crazier. Hold on. Rooms. You haven't heard anything. We're just starting it. So what's the case? Kegon sheshil shel yado lamata mishlosha v'kibla. So you're bending over. But it says omeid. It says the oni is omeid b'chutz. If he's omeid, how could he possibly have his hand down on the ground? Oh, that's simple. He is a dwarf. That's the answer. You did it.
You did it.
This is the invasion ball. You can catch a low fly.
A low fly.
They're filling in for Dove.
Without
amazing. Now there could be another. There's one alternative to the dwarf, and that is actually the guy is 7 feet high, but he's standing in a hole.
Yeah, that's more likely.
That's what I expect. More likely than a dwarf.
Yeah. All right, so that's one possibility. He may be shocher. It might be bending, or maybe he's in a hole, he's in a guma. He's a dwarf. There is a little bit of a problem with the guy who's in the hole. Because if he's in the hole, then the hole is a different rishus. I think it's infinitely complicated over here. So, what would be the case of the guy in the hole? So Tosis explains there is a klal which is called Rabim Mishtam Shimbo. In other words, you can have areas which normally would have been Rishut La'atzmam in a Rishut Rabim, but everyone makes use of that particular part as the way that they use the Rishut Rabim. So in other words, let's say they would always hitch their animals up to that place or something, you know. That remains bottle to the Rishut Rabim. That must be the type of thing it's talking about over here. And we'll see a lot more of that later.
foot. Is not
but the Gemara says, I mean, come on, you got to be kidding. Omar Rava Ichbel Tana Lashma Inan Kolhani. The Tana now has gone out of his way to create a totally insane case that we can only figure out to now that the guy is a dwarf, or he's sitting in, I mean, why don't you just say, you know, you stuck your beged in or something. I mean, Bishleimif was telling me a straight out understandable Kiddush. I mean, okay. He's not teaching me anything. All he's doing is making me crazy, and I have to figure out some kind of absolutely bananas case. And that's what he's talking about in the Mishnah. I don't believe it. Elo Amar Rava, I insist that indeed the Tana is teaching us something very important by very virtue of the fact that it's unreasonable to say that this is a special case. It's not a special case. And that's the whole point. The Tana is teaching us that Yado Shel Adam Chashuva Lo Ke'arba'a L'arba'a. Since the din of 4x4 is not a din in Rishuyos, and it's not Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, it simply comes from our sense of what at rest means. A hand is the most at rest thing that a person has. He thinks of that as a place that is secure. That's even a way we talk about it. I want to keep it at hand. We use it as a synonym for security. So you're telling me a hand has to be 4x4. That's the point that the Tana is making. A hand is, by definition, the equivalent of 4x4. V'chein kiyosa raven am Rabbi Yochanan. That's the point that the Tana is making here. Is yado shel adam kashuvalo ke'arba'a al arba'a. Comes along Rav Avin and quotes no machloket on it. So Amar Rav Avin, Amar Rav Ilo, Amar Rav Yochanan, which seems to be really just restating this, because Rav Yochanan just said it. Yado shel adam kashuvalo. That namely zora chepetz v'nach b'toch yado shel chaviro chayav. If you throw a baseball into another guy's hand, you're chayav. Michael Marshall, and I said, so what are you teaching me? That yado shel adam kashuvalo karbal arba. That's what Rabbi Yochanan just said. But why did Rabbi Yochanan have to say it in two different ways? I mean, it's the same statement. Ha'omer Rabbi Yochanan chada zimna. Ah, but you see, ma'od the tema hanami lehechad akshva hu liyadei. Alo hechad alo akshva hu liyadei im alo. Gamashmala. It might have been understandable where the person who is doing the malacha is the one who is machshiv his own hand. In other words, I feel my hand is to me secure, attached to me. I'm doing an Akira or I'm doing the Anok. Fine. But in a case where somebody is standing there and I throw something into his hand, doesn't even say he caught it, lands in his hand. Ooh, wow. That's a shot. Is that also considered to be Arba al Arba? Or since the other person really wasn't thinking in terms of catching, it wasn't an issue. It's not that a hand is a mokam arba al arba. I might have thought. Gamashman, that it's the nature of a hand to be arba al arba.
Isn't the hand that's throwing it arba al arba?
Yes, but the hand in which it lands
is also.
And maybe it requires consciousness and intent to be arba al arba.
Okay. So
Gamashman, that it doesn't.
Okay, it doesn't.
Doesn't.
And so is it still reshuting?
It's whatever it is. It's wherever it is. That's not the issue to be a Rishus Hayach. It's only the issue Arba Larba in terms of Akira and Hanocha. Not in terms of being a different Rishus. We're only trying to figure out why it's considered to be at rest in a Rishus. It's not that the hand is defining the Rishus. Omer of Abin, Omer of Eloi, Omer of Yochan. Amad bim kobo v'kibel chayav. How about if you're throwing a ball for yourself to catch? Throw the ball up. You stand where you are now, the ball lands, you catch it. Okay, so then, enokinami, then you could, I'm sorry, this is, we're not up there yet. The other guy we're talking about, the other guy was Amad Vekibel, he's Chayev. If he's Okam in the Komo, Vekibel, he's Potter, and this basically is the Tanya that we had before, Tanya Nami Oki. Acherim Omrim Amad Vekomo Vekibel Chayav. Akabi mekomo v'kibel patur, that we understood. Now, how about if a guy's throwing it to himself? That's the shayla. Boy, Rabbi Yochanan. Zarak chayfus, a guy throws a ball, runs, which is very common, runs himself across the field, catches the ball, when it lands.
Before it lands.
About juggling?
Before it lands.
As it lands.
Yeah. Well, no, he waits 4 hours.
Movement.
So now the question is, what would be that din? Michael Mibele, what's the logic that he's asking? He's asking whether, in the same way that we said before, if another individual gets in the way and catches the ball, then we say that the original trajectory of the ball was interrupted by the other person who now has done a hanacha. Two people who do a hanacha, one who does the akir, one who does the akir, are part. But if it's he himself, we can look at it as if it's one akir and hanacha by the same person. Or we can say, since for all intents and purposes, in interrupting the original trajectory, he becomes another person.
Interrupting?
Yeah. He ran now to catch the ball where before it was going to hit the ground. So he's acting as a second person. Does that now, as separate, in other words, I did an akira. Okay. Now I did a separate hanacha. Even though it happened to be me, and even though it happened to be my machshava originally to go catch it, but since it wasn't innate in the act at that time that it would be caught, so then maybe it's like two completely different people who do it.
But if you threw there intentionally from to run, then how is it two people?
It's not. Because the Shabbos is like this: is a malacha of Shabbos considered to be a single act that I do? So in other words, I throw a ball onto a basket. So there, at the time that I threw the ball was going to land in the basket.
Okay.
And physically speaking, I completed the malach at that point. Right? But if I, or even if it's not a basket, it's another guy's hand, it's the same thing. Okay, what makes the other guy's hand another person? The fact that the original trajectory of the ball would not have landed in his hand, right? So therefore, the other guy who before was nothing but a basket, all of a sudden becomes another person. And since he's another person, I didn't complete the whole malacha. Fine. Now the question is, I place myself in the position of that other person. So it's true it's the same person as doing it, and it's true it's all one mamachshava, which, by the way, could have been in the other case. I threw a ball in order for the guy to go run and catch it. It wouldn't have changed anything. So over here, it's one machshava, that doesn't mean anything. Right? And the question is whether that interruption itself makes me a different person, and in terms of this malacha, it's like two people did it. Because the one who did the first part is not the same one, even though he's physically the same one, but vis-a-vis this malacha is not the same one. No. That's what the Chaim is pointing out. That the machshava l'chatchila. Oh yeah, you're talking. Even though the machshava, correct. Even though the machshava was the same, but that's true about the other guy too. My machshava could have been for him to run and catch him. So anyway, we know it's not the machshava that was the essence here. We don't have a solution to that. Omer Avavin, Omer Yochanan, Hichnis Yado L'Toch Chatzar Chaveiro. Somebody sticks his hand into another person's chatzar. V'kibel megishamim, he takes now rainwater, v'hotzi, and removes it into Rishut HaRabim, so he's chayev. What do you mean he's chayev? I thought you said, isn't this the case in the Mishnah, essentially? The Oni sticks his hand into the chatzar of a balabayit, the balabayit puts something into his hand, and he removes it. What's the difference whether the balabayit put something into his hand or the clouds put something into his hand? How can he be chayav? He's potter. Somebody else did the akira, right? The cloud. The akira. The akira. Not the anocha. He does the anocha. But he never did an akira.
Right.
So I understand. So how can he be chayav? It's exactly the case of the Mishnah.
Right.
If the balabayit put it into his hand. Ask the Gemara, mali itino chaviro, mali itino shamayim. Who cares if the owner of the house, his friend, put something on him? Or if God put something on him? I mean, the point is, he never did the act of the akira.
Just drops fell in his hand, it's talking about?
Raindrops falling on my hand.
That's it.
Lo, you're right. We can't read it this way. Lotema kibel elakalat. It's got to be talking about he wasn't actually kibel, but rather he saw to it that the rain would be knocked off of its trajectory into his hand. So he puts one hand down on the ground and knocks the rain into his other hand as it lands, right?
Why do you have to do that? He's just standing in the middle of the rain.
Because he wants to illustrate the Mishnah, and they're taking pictures of this, and they're going to be showing it in that other galaxy. They don't care that it's his Shabbat.
I think there were aliens somewhere in there.
So therefore, he was high because he did the Akira. But wait, if he's just knocking raindrops out of the air, why is there an Akira from a place that's Arba al Arba? The rain lands on top of the wall, and he basically gets the rain on the wall and knocks it into his hand. So what? What do you mean on a wall? On a wall, the water is flowing off the wall. It's flowing down the wall. So what kind of Akira? There's no Hanukkah. Your problem was that there was no Hanukkah of the water for him to do an Akira. The water is basically just running off the wall. Why is that called Munach? V'holonach? It wasn't stopped on the wall. Well, Rava says if you have a wall that's on a diagonal, that's called a Hanukkah. So Akanami Bekoto Mishupa, it's talking about a wall that's not a straight drop. It's got a 45-degree angle on it.
It slowly maybe goes down.
And right now we're assuming that Rava would have held that if it's not going directly down, it's considered to be at rest, which seems a little crazy. But that's what Rava says. Really? Where does Rava say that? The case that Rava says it is on a Mishnah, which is talking about a guy who's reading a sefer. Now, in those days, a Stam sefer was not a zebra romance novel. Parchment. It was a parchment sefer, sefer Torah or a Chumash or something like that. So it unrolls. He's reading and it unrolls, and now it's rolled down, into the other Rishus. So what does he do? Can he roll it back up? That's the question. So he is reading this sefer on the askufa. Now the askufa itself is a carmelite because it's got basically, later on the Gemara explains that it's talking about a carmelite because it's adjacent to a reshut harabim and it's not 10 tefachim high, anything between, yeah. That's a doorstep. It's between 3 tefachim and 10 tefachim high, which gives it a din, if it's 4x4, of a carmelite.
What is the askufa itself?
The askufa is the threshold.
What?
The threshold.
Threshold of the door?
Yeah. Next, up against the street. He needs a little bit of light, so he's leaning out over this threshold.
Between
Rishul Teyachid and Rishul Terabim. And the sefer rolls out of its hand. Nidgalga has sefer miyado. No, he's holding one end. And the other end rolls, right?
Part of it. This is all on the ground.
That's right. No, we're going to see. Rav is explaining that he's not on the ground floor. So go below it slow. He can roll the sefer back to him. Why? Because anyway, he is in a carmelite. And therefore, since he's still holding one end of it, there's no Akira, and the Rabbanan didn't even aser Mishum Shvut to carry into a carmelite without Akira. Now, had he dropped the entire book, he wouldn't have been able to bring it back into the carmelite, but also only mid Rabbanan. But if he didn't drop the entire book and he's still holding one end, so then it never is considered itself to be completely in the other Rishus, because he's still holding the end. How about if he's up on the roof? Minit gargela sefer miyado. Now, it's hanging, okay? He's holding one end, and the sefer now is hanging in the air over the Rishut HaRabim. What about then? So it depends. Since Rishut HaRabim doesn't extend over 10 tvachim from the surface, so once it's 10 tvachim above the area of the Rishut HaRabim, it's considered to be in a node space, right? And therefore, you could just roll it back because it's, you're allowed the chatchila to carry from a node space onto your roof. So that's fine. Mishi giyala sarat vachim, but once it hits the Rishut HaRabim, and now it's entered to within 10 tvachim of the ground, about the height of this table, then it's in the area of the Rishut HaRabim, and even though he still is holding one part of it, he has to be hofcho ala ktab. What he should do is he should turn the sefer over, so at least not to allow the sefer Torah to be exposed and just hanging there all Shabbos. They'll see the back of the parchment, and the writing will be up against the wall. So whatever covet we can give the sefer, we should give the sefer. Knock. Can you dash in there and get the batteries? Yeah. These are hard questions. The only way you can get an answer to this question is by sticking around for the rest of the session. Okay.
How did it turn into a Carmelite?
That's Kuf is a Carmelite.
I'm sorry.
Kuf is a Carmelite because it's less than 10 Tvachim. It's more than 3 Tvachim. Okay. Meanwhile, we've discovered another din.
Between
3 Tvachim and 10 Tvachim, a 4x4 space is a Carmelite.
In what area?
Wherever it is.
Outside of Rishus Yotin.
It's a separate reshus because it's raised.
Between
the inside of the house, inside. By definition, a threshold had to be raised in order to hold the thresh. Seriously, that's where it came from, right? Finally, I just said, no. They used to put threshings down on the floor to catch the dirt, you know. And then you would wipe. So the threshold was that which held the thresh in place. They put straw down on the floor. Yeah. So it was less than, huh?
An entranceway
that was a bit higher to make sure that the straw would stay on the floor in the house.
In the house,
so that they could keep it clean.
The threshold
prevented the thresh from blowing out.
Primitive equivalent of the plastic sofa covers.
Basically, yes. Exactly. Okay, so now we're getting to Rava's case. So the Gemara asks over there, Vavina, but we asked over there on that Mishnah, Amai Hofkal Aktav, what's the big problem of bringing the sefer back up? Since anyway it was hanging down in the middle of the air, it was never knock. It's just hanging loose. Why can't I bring it back? It isn't really in Rishus HaRabim. And that's where Rava said the wall of the building was on a diagonal. So actually, this was the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but on the other side. Not the one that they dropped the apple from. So this was the one where they did the experiment about the speed of the apple along an inclined plane. Okay? So as the sefer drops from the roof, it hits the side of the wall. So now it's knock on the wall. That must be the case of the rain in the other guy's rishus. It was basically flowing off of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. That explains it. Except for one minor problem. Rain has a tendency to keep moving because it's a liquid. So says the Gemara, I understand. Ima the Omer Rava the Sefer, the Ovid denieth. Yeah, I mean, Rava was talking about a scroll that does have a tendency to come to a stop. But mine, last time we looked, Miavdi denieth. I never noticed water having a tendency to come to stop on an inclined plane. It seems to enjoy rolling right along there. So why in the world is that the solution to the case?
It was 30 below zero, it froze.
There we go. Richie, you're on it today. That's the Gemara.
Yeah.
Hello, my Rava. Kegon shekalat mi'agadei guma. What it's talking about is that there was a puddle, and you took the water off of the puddle. So now what's the chiddush? Obviously, if you took the water off the puddle, that's a standard akira. So what's the point of saying it? It's in pshita. Ah, it's not pshita. Because if you take water off of a puddle, then that water is not really nach on the ground. Because after all, it's a liquid on a liquid. You're taking a liquid, so you're taking basically, I mean, any liquid is by definition not nach, because each molecule is, that's what makes it a liquid, is the fact that it's not nach. If it were really at rest, it would be a solid. That's why Richie said the case would be where it froze. That's the point. So, no, snow, we'll see later, actually. So, I might think that that's not called hanacha, because we should look at each molecule separately, and there's not any water that's at rest over here. Kamash malan, that we look at a liquid as a single entity being at rest in whatever it's contained in. And actually, this is Rava's Shita. As the Rava Lataime, Diyoma Rava Maim Agabe Maim Hainu Hanachatan. The mode of referring to at rest in a space of a liquid is as a liquid. That's what Hanacha means. But to put a nut on top of water, let's say I'm floating now a nut in this puddle, the nut is not considered to be at rest. Because the water on which the nut is resting is itself not at rest vis-a-vis the nut. In other words, if you're part of the water, then you could say you are a single entity. The nut is not a single entity with the water. And therefore the nut sees the water as being a liquid that is moving around, that is not at rest. So the nut certainly would not be at rest. But where it gets interesting is, how about if the nut's on a toy sailboat? The nut is on a toy sailboat in the puddle. Now, the sailboat is not at rest.
How big is it?
It doesn't matter how big it is. It's floating around on the puddle. But the question is, if the sailboat defines space for the nut, then the nut is in a resting space, which is itself not at rest. But that's the question. Should we look at the space vis-a-vis the nut, or should we look at the nut vis-a-vis the underlying space?
How is it different if the nut is not at rest, if it's sitting on the water?
Right.
And the
but that's because the nut knows the difference between the water and the ground.
But the boat, put
a little boat in between the nut and the ground.
But the boat is also not at rest.
But the boat is at rest as far as the nut is concerned.
The nut is
take a look at you. You're moving around like a meshuggah, and you're on a boat.
I mean, do you notice that you're on something?
Right. Do you notice you're on a little rock in the middle of space?
That's
right. On the back of the great turtle.
Yeah.
Mud makes a difference. Mud, you know, the army. Thick mud is different. So now that's my question, says Rava. This is a serious problem. Do we say if an egos is inside of a kli, and now the kli is floating on the water, do we look at the nut? As far as the nut is concerned, its local space is at rest, and therefore it's nayak. Or do we say, but consider that the very kli that it's in is itself not at rest, so maybe locally should be defined by the space, not by this nut's local space, and therefore it should not be at rest. Well, nayak, deny it. Bottom line is, it's moving. Take them. Now you could see that Einstein was raised on Masechet Shabbos, and once you're raised on this, you start thinking about life differently.
Can you imagine if the cosmology was more advanced and they realized how fast the planet was going in the solar system and the universe? How unbelievable!
Whatever the Taita told her, it's al belima, it's the ultimate nananacha. Take them. Now, how about if you have two different liquids with different densities? Can you then say that this is actually amazing? I just love it. So then do you say that you look at the liquid as an entity? Or does the fact that the different densities force the liquids apart means that you can't look at it as one entity? So suppose you've got oil floating on wine. Now, we could have had floating on water as far as Shabbos is concerned, but we want to compare it to a case in Truma, Legabe Tuma, in which case it's wine that's important because there's no such thing as water that could be Truma. So we took this case, but don't let the wine part throw you off. So you have oil floating on top of wine. That's a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Nuri and the Rabbona, where, in terms of the din legabe tuma, when it comes to truma, so there it says shemen shetzafa gabe yayin v'nagat shul yom b'shemen lo pasal ala shemen. If you have a tful yom, now tful yom has a din of a sheni, and therefore he can pasal truma because a sheni pasals truma. But since he's not Tamei, he doesn't turn that Sheni into a Rishon. So therefore, the wine on the bottom is only in touch with oil that has become basically a Shlishi. And it can't be Makabel Tuma from a Shlishi, assuming that they're different. If they're all the same entity, fine, so then they all were Makabel Tuma directly from a Tfuyon. But otherwise, we got a problem. Because if the, when I say shlishi, I don't really mean a shlishi, it's not such thing as a shlishi by truma, but a pasul. Something that is pasul is by definition not tame, because tame means something whose tuma can be detected because it emits tuma. Something that's pasul has been affected by tuma but won't emit tuma. So you can't possibly call it tame.
Just can't.
Because a tuma detector won't detect any tuma there.
Just can't.
It's been impacted by tuma, but it's not tame. Curious case. So we call it pasul because it has all the problems of being tame, but you can't call it tame.
It's not contagious.
It stops there.
It stops there, right. So therefore, the shemen is the last thing that became pasul. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says no. Because they're both liquids, despite the fact that they have different densities and viscosities, Shneim mechubarim zelazeh, they're considered to be one entity, and therefore they were both mekabel tuma together. Amar Rav Avin, Amar Rav Lo, Amar Rav Yochanan. Just to clarify matters, there's nothing wrong with walking in and out between Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim all day long, carrying. Because if you started the day on Friday with a whole backpack full of ochlin umashki, you come into the house, you go out of the house, you come into the house, you go out of the house, come into the house, go out of the house, all day long, you will never be chayav until such time as you finally stop and then go again. Because that stopping is just anocha, but then you'd have to make an akira and another anocha. So if you don't stop at one point, you never did an akira and anocha, and therefore, for all that people think you're carrying, you never carried once. Omer Abaye, when we say you stopped, we don't mean you stopped for a minute because you were getting a little tired of walking in and out for the past 20 hours. We mean you stopped, really, because you need to adjust your burden. We mean you stopped, actually, to rest. So, Ushamad Lafush, but if you stopped because you were getting all out of whack and needed to readjust your backpack a bit and pull on the straps and so on, but you didn't intend to sit there and get a little bit of rest, then that's not called stopping. How do I know that? Mimai, Miriam Amar, Toch Arba Amot. This is talking about a guy who's carrying Arba Amot Bershut Rabbi. He stops within the Arba Amot. If he stopped Lafush, he rested for a minute, and then he continues to walk, he's potter, because he didn't carry four amas in Rishus HaRabim. He stopped before the four amas. You only carry Rishus HaRabim from the beginning of Arba Amas to the end of Arba Amas. So that he didn't do. But if he stopped L'chatev, just to adjust his backpack or what he's carrying on his shoulder, then he would be chayev, because that's not called stopping. That's just part of walking, is you adjust your burden. The opposite is true if he stops chutz li'arba amos. If he stops lafush, he's resting, then that's anaka. So at that point, he's chayev because he's past the four ama mark. But if it was lechatef, if he's just fixing his backpack, then he would be potter. So I understand. So what's getting back now to what you said, Rabbi Yochanan said, that if you carry all day long, what's the chiddush in that? Because the original Akira, which you did before, what you did was basically, you pick up something, hayata'uno chlinu mashki. You never had any intent to carry this out, right? Now all of a sudden you go out, or you go in. He's saying you're potter. Why are you potter? Because the Akira originally was with no intent to carry it out. Mipnei shelo haita Akira arishona was not for that purpose. Okay? All you intended to, in other words, hayata'un means a guy is in his house. He just took something out of the fridge. He's about to put it on the table. All of a sudden, somebody calls him outside. He walks outside carrying the thing. He's potter. Because the akira that he did was in order to move it to the table, which is completely mutter. There was nothing to do with the hotzah. The hotzah that follows afterwards is without an akira. Because that akira that he did in the house on the fridge is not related to the act of hotzah, which was only thought of afterwards. It's not part of the hotzah. That's how yotahun. Whether it was Biba'odion, we had a case. Then if it was hotzah, was it from Alecha Shabbos? Or in this case, even if it's on Shabbos, right? But the problem is Rabbi Yochanan already said this. Because Rabbi Yochanan said, Omrav Safra, Omrav Ami, Omrav Yochanan, basically the same idea, instead of the difference being that he was ta'un from before Shabbos, or somebody had given it to him and he never did an Akira. Here the case is he went, Amavich HaFetzim, Mizavit L'Zavit, he's picking something up from the fridge and he wants to set it down on the table. Minim Lakalem, and he changes his mind and he goes out the door. Lotzion. Patur? Shaloi Takira Misharishon Alakap. What's the difference whether you say it the first way or you say it the second way? It's the same idea, exactly the same idea. If I didn't do an Akira with the specific purpose of removing it from this Rishus, I'm potter. What's the nafka mina whether you use the example of somebody put it on me in the day, or I went to the refrigerator and meant to take it to the table? It's the same thing. You're right, it is. It's Amorayim. This is, Rabbi Yochanan said it once. The different Amorayim expressed it in different ways. It's one thought. Amorayim, Umar Amarlava Hadalishna, Umar Amarlava Hadalishna. One said it in one way, one said it in another way, but basically it was a single thought of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so just to review, we ended up finally with a simple, straightforward understanding of why the Mishnah chooses the case of putting something in someone's hand. He didn't have to be a dwarf, he didn't have to be standing in a hole, and he didn't have to have a basket attached to his hand. All of those cases were not necessary. On the contrary, the simple approach is the Mishnah talks about a hand because a hand is the equivalent of arba al arba, whether the person intended to use it or whether a ball just landed in his hand. That's the definition of arba al arba for a human hand. That closed up the whole first sugya. Then we got into the question of the relationship of the original Akira to the completion. So the first question we spoke about was whether that Akira created a trajectory that would have landed in this place or not. It had to be the same trajectory. Then we questioned, what about if it's the same person who interrupts the trajectory? We left that with a taker issue. Then we started talking about what's the din of an Akira where something seems to be in motion. It's liquid. What's on the edge of a wall? So that got us tangentially into the question of hanging. But that wasn't the point. We only brought that in to discuss what's the nature of Akira of a liquid. Turns out that a liquid is considered to be at rest. Meanwhile, we spoke about what's the relationship of a solid object to the liquid, and what's the relationship of a solid object on another solid object to the liquid. Okay, those were all questions of the nature of Akira. And we ended now with this question of what was the purpose of the original Akir, which is a new idea. Was the purpose part of an act of Hotzah, or was the purpose for something else, in which case it wouldn't be included in the Hotzah? Nice, straightforward, pleasant, exciting. And if you're working in a patent office, the best way to pick up all kinds of interesting figures is...
Wait.